You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro 103.5 FM, and this is the home of Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Your host Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, has opened the doors of the Speakeasy to invite you all in to find a seat and get comfortable in the place where you're always welcome and can always expect the best. Good morning, Claudio.
Good morning.
What kind of trouble have you gotten into this
Oh, all kinds of troubles, but I hear you're paving a new road or finally creating a driveway for yourself.
Yes,
in where are we?
Down in
Moncure.
Yes. Yeah, I've got the surveyor has come in and put the flags in, and now I just need my son's friend to give me a call and let me know when I can meet him down there and say, hey, this is where you want to go. I've got like...
Beginning to feel real, huh?
600 feet of road and cross a creek.
Well, I'm still not over my... That's awesome. Are you still thinking about that, what is it, yurt?
Yeah, I did give up the idea of a yurt, basically.
Because of the winter months.
Because of the winter months. And I didn't want to come in home and find it just 5 degrees warmer than it was outside when it's only 15 degrees outside.
Sort of a canvas structure, something...
You know, it'll work if you go in and you get the wood fire going. You can do it.
It'll work if you stay home and keep warm, right.
But I'm too spoiled. I'm getting too lazy in my old age. I want to go in and have it warm without doing that. But it's so we're going to put up something, whatever.
Good. Well,
whatever.
Let me know, and I'll come and celebrate the tent party or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever's going on.
Yeah, we're thinking if once everybody can drive onto the property, we might have a tailgate picnic or something.
Good. keep me tuned in.
Absolutely.
What
about you?
Well, I'm still trying to get over the wonderful time I had with Al Jarreau and company on stage at the Carolina Theater, the Duke, what was his name?
Yeah.
The Duke Trio, anyway. Wonderful evening. And every once in a while you really sort of connect with one of those artistic souls there, and that was one such event for me as stage manager at the Carolina Theater. And speaking of that, I'd like to acknowledge the historic Carolina Theater of Durham for their support of Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater. And we're even switching presidents there now. Bob Nocek, who was on the show in his early days, which was not very long ago,
right.
We had him on, is now stepping up as president, and Connie is stepping down.
Uh-huh.
So all that's going on, and I think a whole new energy is being brought to the Carolina Theater. Bob's making some interesting changes, but I won't really mention those until I know more. Otherwise, I might trip over myself.
Have him on and let him announce them.
I've already announced that, him and his partner, Matt. So at some point, that's in the making.
Great.
So anyway, I want to acknowledge the historic Carolina Theater and also mention that we have the old trooper, Bob Crowley, back with us today.
Hi, Claudio.
Hello. And he's brought with him the Apex Poet Laureate, Don Tuttle. Say good morning, Don.
Happy to be here.
And I'm going to get back to these folks in just a minute. We're basically going to interview both with more exception given to the poet. So we're having a morning of the literary.
Yes, absolutely.
We're going to let the literary fling wild. Mm-hmm. Bob has all sorts of... he lives a fascinating life, or gets involved in way more things than I can personally imagine for myself. So he's got some things to bring to the table. And then we're going to slip into the psychology, the mind, the brain of Don Tuttle.
So, uh-huh. You weren't aware of that, were you, Don?
I'm here.
Good. What, neurology? So we're going to just swing over to Bob Crowley and say good morning. And, hey, why don't you tune us into what's been going on? And that includes Rusty Bucket Kids and whatever you want to bring to the table.
I get into way too many things no matter
what. That's
what
I'm thinking.
But Rusty Bucket Kids is doing well. We're in fundraising mode right now. So anybody with some extra money, just let us know.
That's the television series.
And we're doing all kinds of other fun things in Apex here. One of the things that I'm starting to get involved with is something I asked Claudio for. I want a piece of his art.
Aha.
I definitely want a piece of his art for a silent auction at a golf tournament coming up in August.
And this is not to support golf, thank you.
No, this is not to support golf. This is to support something very, very important to me and to a lot of people. I work with an organization called Hope's Hope. Hope's Hope is based in Apex. We also have an office out in Minnesota. And the organization is a nonprofit to support the families of terminally ill children. It's a neurodegenerative disease. I'm only working with them recently, so I haven't quite memorized the four-mile-long name of this, but this is a particularly horrible disease. It has to do with a buildup of iron in the brain, and you'll find the outset of it is instantaneous. One day, your child is running around very happy. The next day, Mommy, my arm hurts. They'll be between 6 and 8 years old when this happens. And once it happens, there's no stopping. There's no way to cure it. There's no way to even relieve it. Within a year, the child will cripple up like they have arthritis, crumple like a dried leaf, go blind, deaf, and die.
My word. So, and we don't even know that this is genetic.
We have no idea. There's no marker that anyone's yet been able to find. It's not a rare disease, but it's not, luckily, very common. But still... It's a cause that I've jumped on, and like I said, we're going to hold an auction in along with this golf tournament, and anybody who'd like to be a part of it, we please direct you to the Hope's Hope website. That's Hope's Hope, HOPES-HOPE.org, and you'll find out all the information there. And please, if you can come out, it's a great day for golf in August at Prestonwood, and we'll have all kinds of fun and maybe help some kids, too.
Well, I'd be very proud to submit a work for that.
Okay.
So, yeah, thank you for tuning in. What a horrible thing. What a horrible thought.
Right.
Yeah. And but we can move on to more fun things. I was telling Audrey earlier, I'm actually reaching a plateau in my life. I've got my first novel coming out October 1st. An actual published novel, not self-published. Somebody else is paying
big
for
slap
it.
On the back for that one.
Oh, boy.
You're
so,
not kidding. We've already got them scheduled for Carborough Book
So tell us who the publisher is, and tell us a bit about
Peak
the story.
The publisher is Peak City Publishing. It's Peak City Publishing out of Apex. The story is called The Wanderer of the New Hope. It's about a ghostly presence that inhabits the hills and valleys of New Hope Creek, which is what we now call Jordan Lake, after the dam was built in the 70s. And you'll hear the whole story about how the presence drifts among the trees and the hills and such. And, of course, it's a ghost story.
And it's going to be great right before Halloween.
Right. We bring it out October 1st.
Mm-hmm. You're actually going to have a reading there, right?
We're going to have a reading at the bookstore on the 31st on Halloween, Sunday, October 31st in the evening. We'll have the place lit with just candles and me in a monk's robe reading ghost stories. So that should be a lot of fun.
The
and also sign books and all that fun stuff.
The Monk Crowley.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Okay. Moving right along.
Yes, right along, please. I've got the easy part. Bob's so seasoned on radio himself, so I'm just sort of going to let him keep rolling on, and at some point we're gonna bring Don Tuttle to the table. But there's a little more to catch on about Bob. So
a little bit more for me. The Apex Arts Council is growing and making things happen, and our band is playing just about everywhere. Anybody?
And just to interrupt, Bob, of course, is the president of the Apex Arts Council.
Yes, I am. I have that honor. And
I am.
We have our community band that's getting more and more earplay around the area, the Peak City Sound.
Oh, is that with...
Jack Clayton is the leader.
Okay.
And it's a 17-piece R&B band. So
hey.
Anybody that needs a band, donations are welcome. But depending upon what your organization is, if you're another charity, we might come out and play for free for you.
Is there a contact info? Do they have a website?
Yeah, just come to the website, apexarts.org.
I see.
And you should be able to find us. And we're having a little problem with the website right now. Somebody realigned some DNS tables, and it takes you someplace totally different. But I'm told by the end of this week that's fixed.
Uh-huh.
But you'll be able to come there or... contact us and let us know what you want, and we'll work with you there. The Writers Guild is going like mad, and I'm about to reconstitute the Apex Community Theater Act. So we're going to look at producing some plays around the area. And that's
tell us a bit about where that's going
to
be.
Well, the first place, of course, that we look to for any of that is the Halley Cultural Arts Center of Apex. That's one of the places.
Right.
But I'm also reaching out a little bit more. Just because the name is Apex doesn't mean everything has to happen only in Apex. So we are looking to, I may come up and talk to your folks at the Carolina Theater. We may want to come up there and put a play on or two, or maybe talk to your friend Peggy down in Sanford.
At some point,
go to the Temple Theater. there's a lot of places we can do this stuff. So that's another thing that's happening.
When you're in the throes of it, just let me know and we'll work something out.
Yeah. So, and I've also gotten myself involved with another cause and organization through the Arts Council, V-Day Apex.
You better explain that quickly, because the V and day, there's VD in there. We want to take people away from that notion.
Well, the V-Day organization is a nationwide organization that supports programs against violence against women and children. So they produce a play each year that raises funds for this. The last couple of years, they've done the Vagina Monologues.
I was just going to jump over to that, yes.
Yep, and that's, if you haven't seen it, you have to see this thing. This
I've
is
actually
one of
stage
the,
managed it, so I'm well aware. It's a show that reveals all, folks.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you didn't appear in it, so.
No.
But we're going to do a different play this year. It'll be, I forget the name of it, but it's by the same author. It's a similar piece, and we'll be having that around there. So watch for that. We'll probably be in late March or early April.
And where's it slated to be?
Right now, we're talking to the folks at the Halley, trying to work out a date there, and then we'll do more. But we'll have more on the websites, and there'll be posters and ads, and watch The Independent, listen to WCOM.
Uh-huh.
WCOM is the place. If you're here, you're going to get all of it. It's right on the money.
Well, you better define the show.
Well, as soon as I know more about it, all I know is...
No, I'm saying when you say WCOM, that's a little generic. Claudio Speakeasy, thank you very much.
Oh, well, yeah, it'll be on that one, too. No, I like having Claudio off a little bit.
Yes,
here, but,
I know.
Well, you can always send in a PSA.
We'll do some PSAs, and we'll have it here. And I'm sure Audrey will help plug it on her Carborough book beat.
Absolutely.
And probably even get Molly Matlock involved in it somewhere along the line. So we're plugged in all of them.
That's quite a handful.
So other than that, I've just been hanging out and doing nothing and playing on Facebook. That's about it.
Well, that's catching up with Bob's life. Now, Bob, how about introducing our guest?
Our guest today is a gentleman who impressed me, I think, the first moment I ever met him. Don Tuttle has had a career that is a little different from a lot of people that I've known. Don has a military background, and if you were to see him, he still has the military bearing and everything there.
That composure.
Yes. I have to rise up, straighten my spine, shoulders back, head up, chin in.
Yeah,
and get closer to the microphone. There we go.
There we go. Okay.
But you go back to the late 1960s, Don had a very interesting job in that he was a military briefer. His job was to learn everything he could about the situation in then Vietnam.
This did not mean he ran around in briefs.
No, he didn't run around in briefs.
Not all the time, anyway.
Right.
We won't go there.
Saigon, Da Nang, Vung Tau, just a few of the places, yeah.
Yeah, so he got to...
Who's dropping bombs? What did you wake me up for?
But it was then his job to go out and brief all of the admirals and the generals, whether it be Westmoreland, and
yes.
Got to know Lyndon Johnson himself and all of that stuff. So that's quite a background for someone who, as he said, never wrote a line of poetry except for one poem until he was 70 years old.
That's right.
And
you probably didn't have the time or energy for it until then.
Maybe that's true.
Don has a style all his own. It harks of Robert Service. It harks of Ogden Nash. But it's Don all the way.
I can see that.
He does some incredible work. So
I've had the pleasure of hearing him a few times, so we're looking forward to him actually reading some of his works here. Why don't we begin with a selection of your choice, Don?
Sir, I am delighted to be here and have this opportunity, and I just celebrated my 80th birthday last week, so
happy birthday.
I am an octogenarian, and get a new title when you get this old. And I've got a poem that I wrote a few years back that is appropriate to this situation. It's called Reflections of an Older Man.
Ah, good.
I grow old, and never will again enfold some darling girl in my embrace, her silken skin upon my face, nor taste the nectar of her love, nor feel once more her passion rise and see the love light in her eyes, our bodies merging into one until our needs are met and done. And when will Cupid then restore romantic liaisons once more? My life is making very clear what at my back I often hear, time's raven whispering in my ear, nevermore. Those memories are sweet and strong, and for those times I often long. But years, it's true, have surely passed, and into old age now I'm cast. And so at last I realize the passion's only in my eyes, for time itself has kept the score. And time's own raven speaks once more and whispers to me, nevermore. So while you have your youth and dreams, go boldly where your heart esteems, with one who makes your dreams come true and celebrates sweet love with you, before time's raven at your door declares that dread word, nevermore.
Bravo, what a good use of nevermore.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful poem.
Thank you.
Kind of melancholic.
Edgar Allan Poe and a few others I stole words from.
It makes me even more determined to grow old being a dirty old man.
You're well on your way.
That was beautiful, Don. That was absolutely beautiful.
Thanks, sir.
Do you have another one you'd read? Because I want to go a little bit into your military background, but I really want the public to hear your poetry first.
Bob likes cars. He told me this one. So this one's called Cars. When going into town as I used to do, I'd see Plymouths, Fords, and Chevys in a Buick or two. Now things are really different, and the cars that I see have names like Suzuki and Infiniti. I see a Honda and a Kia and a Subaru. There'll be Volvos, Mitsubishis, and a Beamer or two. I see an Audi and a Porsche and a little Daewoo. There's a Nissan, a Toyota, and a Daihatsu. There's a Fiat and a Jaguar and a Mercedes-Benz. When it comes to foreign autos, well, it never ends. There's a Mazda and a Hyundai and a Lexus in view. There's a Saab, a Maserati, and an Isuzu. You'll see lots of Japanese cars, a couple of Koreans, and you surely must admit there are a lot of Europeans. When you buy a new car and you slip behind the wheel, you can bet it's not a Packard or an Oldsmobile. They've been driven from production by a lot of foreign brands, and the names are really strange to us older hands. It could be a Lamborghini or a Volkswagen Bug, but my own evaluation is to give a little shrug. I'm happy to be sticking with American production, for as to all these foreign cars, to me they lack seduction. Some folks say these foreign cars are really better made, but I'll still buy American. That's one thing I won't trade.
Okay. There's one for the American economy.
Yeah. There you go.
I would qualify that as white man's rap.
In a lot of ways it is, but I love the way that just the names of the mics blend together in the rhythm.
Well researched on that one. So Bob, you actually know more about angles that I might approach him on with his own military background. I'm really curious about the naval background.
Well, it's kind of interesting because when Don and I first met, we started comparing things. And I was in Vietnam in 1968-69, and so was Don, but on two very different levels.
He was doing real work. I was just briefing.
Yeah, you were in the actual field.
I was I was in the field. I was with a combat engineer unit. I was a radio guy for a field reconnaissance and village pacification team. So we were out in the jungle mapping roads. Like I always tell people, back here in the world, you'd read about how the 4th Infantry Division swept down Highway 9 with 20,000 troops. Well, before those 20,000 troops swept down that road, me and six other guys went out and made up a map so they wouldn't get lost all alone. And that was a lot of fun. But so I mentioned that to Don, and we got to talk, and I come to find out that he was the guy who was informing all of the generals and the admirals and flying out to Yankee Station to the aircraft carriers and explaining what's going on and talking to Lyndon Johnson and letting him know what was happening there. He's got a great story, too, about the first time as a non-aviator landing on a carrier on a jet and getting bounced around in the cockpit there.
Well, how about that story, Don?
Well, it's a strong memory. Let me start by saying that, Bob and Claudio. My goodness, I was in the Philippines waiting for a ride out to Saigon, and I got a lift in an A3D, which is a twin jet, one of the largest jet to land on a carrier. Mm-hmm. And I got a ride out to Yankee Station on that thing. Then I had to sit back to back with the pilot, the pilot, the co-pilot, and a navigator who was an enlisted guy. And he and I were sitting there, As I say, I'm the only one facing aft. And as instantaneously as one can recall, we were coming in for our landing, and the pilot backs the jet engines off, so we're just idling in. And then just as I say, as a single instant, you see the deck edge flash past, the jet hits down, the pilot jams the throttle wide open in case the hook doesn't catch the cable.
Right.
And all this all happens at once, and then you just get yanked from 120 miles an hour to zero in a third of a second.
I've always been amazed at that technology.
And it's amazing to me they can stay conscious, because I just went blur for a couple of seconds. But it's a fascinating thing, and there's so much going on at once on a carrier deck, particularly during Vietnam. And you've got these jets. There's a thing they call a JDB, a jet blast deflector, mm-hmm. which is a big sheet of steel that comes up out of the deck at about a 45 degree angle, so that when the jet races its engines to take off, the jet blast is vectored up.
So it doesn't turn everybody on deck into toast,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Or raisins.
Exactly. And then there's a device that breaks. It's an hourglass-shaped piece of steel that's what holds the jet back mm-hmm. when it goes wide open with the jet engines and all the thrust is there. And when the thrust gets high enough, this hourglass thing parts. It's carefully machined to a certain degree of resistance. And until that jet goes wide open and that degree of resistance is hit, that jet is anchored. But once it breaks that thing, it's gone.
My goodness.
And it all happens very, very quickly, let me put it that way. But it's a marvelous memory, the landing on the jet in a jet on a carrier.
It really is
something that comes in so fast and stops so fast.
It's impressive enough to see footage of it on film. I can imagine being in one.
The thing is, as I say, he's idling back on the way in. And as soon as he passes the deck edge, he cops that throttle wide open in case the hook doesn't catch. He's flying again. I got to go around it.
Oh, right.
So it's from idle to wide open, and then the hook catches, then it's back to idle, release the hook, then it's full bore again to get the hell out of the way and get over to where you're supposed to be, and then back to idle again.
Good God.
So the Air Force has no idea how to stress an engine like the Navy does.
There's a couple of Air Force guys that might call in after that one.
Let them. Help yourself, Charlie. Go make a deck landing on a carrier and see how you like.
Don, were you career military?
Yes, I was. I as a young man, I volunteered for the Army. I was going to be a paratrooper. At the end of basic training, the first sergeant called us all together and says, "Airborne's closed."
Airborne's what?
Airborne's closed?
Closed. It's just closed. Shut up. You're in the Army.
Oh, my goodness.
So I went up to, I can't remember. Fort Warden, thank you, Bob.
The historian Bob chimes in.
Fort Warden is up in Washington, and it's where an officer and a gentleman was filmed.
Ah, all right.
So everybody knows Fort Warden.
We should know that, yes.
At any rate, it was boring, and they were making us do calisthenics all the time. And they asked for volunteers for diving school. So I said, "If you volunteer, do you get out of doing calisthenics?" And they said, "Yes." And I said, "I'm in."
Yes, but you don't get a tank.
So I got a 6 month course in deep sea diving and became a hard hat diver in the United States Army.
Whoa.
For some reason I'd assumed you were Navy.
I was later.
Oh, later, I see.
Later. This is my enlisted phase.
I got you, okay.
So then I was ready to go to Korea. The Korean War started. Well, back up a little bit. I spent my 19th year on Okinawa as a private, and I left on my 20th birthday, and 6 days later the Korean War started.
My goodness.
I figured, well, I'm going to go straight back to Korea. No, that's when they sent me up to Fort Warden. That's a big surprise. And then I became a diver, and that was another big surprise.
And where was Fort Warden?
Fort Warden is about as far northwest in the U.S. as you can get.
Hmm. What were the directions about getting there?
Oh, yeah. Go this is the Army, and I'm asking I'm going to where? Fort Warden. Where the hell is that? I said, we don't know. Go up, go up to Fort Lewis and ask at the gate, at the main gate,
where might Fort Lewis be, please?
Yeah. And so I asked the main gate, and the corporal says, wait a minute, I don't know. I'll ask the sergeant of the guard. He knows everything. So he came back and he says, he doesn't know, but go down to the Black Ball Ferry and ask them.
Wonderful system we've got here.
Yeah, yes. This is Seattle. Okay. So I got down there and he said, well, we're not sure, but you go across as far, and then you're as far northwest you can get, and then they'll know where Fort Worden is. And that's how I got there.
Yeah. That's amazing. Hysterical.
I'm amazed you got there.
Go to Fort Lewis, make a right, and hold. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But being a hard hat diver was a marvelous experience. That was another, just a fabulous experience. And we got pretty good at it. And we're diving in the St. James Estuary, 90 feet deep, and a 4-knot current, and you have a descending line, heavy weight on the bottom, and just a line. And you're wearing this diving suit, of course, so you push the chin valve, they call it. It's shaped like a valve in an automobile. Mm-hmm. And you can take it in your mouth and pull it to the left, and that stops all air going out. Okay, so your suit inflates, and you rise. Conversely, you can push it with your chin. That's why it's called a chin valve.
Ah, yes, okay.
And you push it with your chin, and all the air goes out, and down you go. So, but you're going down to the bottom in 90 feet of St. James River Estuary. You had to pull yourself down the last 20 feet because your lines made a catenary, if you understand what I mean.
Oh, okay. So well, it wants to float you back.
Yeah. So you got to pull yourself down, and then you got to hang on when you get down at the bottom to whatever it is you're working on, because if you let go, you're back up at the surface 90 feet downstream.
So what did divers do once they got down there?
Oh goodness, welding, arc welding, cutting, and mechanical
on
stuff.
Ships?
Yeah, mostly mechanical.
Okay.
For example, the problem they have with the runaway oil in the Gulf right now. If it were shallow enough, I understand something like 1,500 feet down. But if it's like 200 or less, a diver can go down and take care of that problem.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That kind of stuff.
So you're working on the under the ships. You're not out. Did you ever go out and lay mines or anything like that?
No. I never dealt with, well, let me think. No, I never dealt with explosives.
Okay, good.
Never
yeah,
dealt with
I
explosives.
Yeah, that would be a tough blow.
It was plenty fun.
Yes.
It was plenty fun doing the stuff I did do. By the way, when you're cutting down there underwater, there is a beautiful silver light. It's just brilliant silver light when you're cutting metal with acetylene arc, what do they call it? Oxy arc. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Arc torch.
Yeah. Oxy arc.
Oxy acetylene.
Ah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a strange mix. It's also got air in it. It's a special nozzle for underwater work.
Hmm. Well, give us some of your more personally fascinating experiences, like meeting Lyndon Johnson and so in your military background.
Starting with the Gulf of Tonkin, I briefed the Maddox before they went on their first trip up into the Gulf, where the Tonkin.
And what did these briefings actually consist of?
Details about where they're going and what's going on.
I see, okay.
And so that they had a feeling that they knew, you know, it wasn't total.
Some sense of familiarity, okay.
But the U.S. government in its, let me just get cut to the mustard here. The CIA was running nasty class Norwegian torpedo boats up into the North Korean area, North Vietnamese area. And attacking shore facilities. They had no torpedoes, but they had an 80-millimeter mortar that they could do this damage with. But the CIA didn't bother to tell the Navy that they were doing these things. So when the Maddox started north in a perfectly innocent tour up the coast, here comes a nasty-class torpedo boat flying past them the other way. The CIA had just conducted an attack up there.
So and nobody was forewarned.
Nobody's telling anybody about.
Ah, boy.
Okay, so the Navy come along in its innocence, and the Maddox goes whistling up the coast, thinking everything's fine. And the North Vietnamese are totally furious for having been attacked again.
I can imagine.
And so that's why they attacked the Maddox big time.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
And they just saw them as the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I briefed Turner Joy, and they went back up together, and it just went on and on. And then Com 7th Fleet got in the act, and the cruiser went up there, and I thought, my God, what are you guys? Are you crazy? I mean, you look on the radar, and there are a dozen fishing boats. Maybe they're fishing boats. Maybe they're torpedo boats. Mm-hmm. You can't tell on the radar screen. And they could be three torpedo boats come flying out there and torpedo that cruiser and send it to the bottom. And I said, what the hell are you guys doing up here like that? They're just vulnerable as hell, you know? Oh, well, one hand doesn't tell the other what it's doing.
I don't think much has changed in that regard.
I'm afraid not, yeah.
No.
Do you ever bring any of those experiences into your poetry?
Into my poetry? No, I don't think I did.
That's a whole resource there that I think would be fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got flat tires. I got a bunch.
Yeah, let's switch back to the poetry for a minute. But I can actually see that in some respects that maybe you write poetry to sort of take yourself away from those kinds of experiences and then go more in a spiritual, philosophical direction.
I think you're right there. Yeah.
I know when I write, it's meditative. It's far more enlightening than some of those experiences.
Reflections of an older man is similar. Mm-hmm. it's very peaceful.
True.
No problems with that. Love letters is another one. Oh, my gosh. Bob likes cars.
Well, which
where's
you already read.
Okay.
You already read that one, I believe, yeah.
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 He likes that one. And let's see. What's
give us
name?
The love letters.
Love letters? You want to hear love letters?
Sure.
It is early in the morning. My pen is in my hand. Whom shall I write? I shall write to Esther. Dear Esther, I miss you. I hope you are well and happy. Love, Dawn. My pen is in my hand. My dog Max crawls over and puts his chin on my ankle. Dear Suzuko, I still remember you after all these years there in Japan. I miss you. I hope you are well and happy. I can't stop loving you. That's in quotes, the song.
Right.
Dawn. My pen is in my hand. A large truck is heard coming down our street. It stops and backs up to the new construction site across from our house. Rumble, rumble, bang, 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 bang. The dump truck has dropped its load and the tailgate slams into the truck bed several times as the driver jerks forward and makes sure all the dirt is out. It is 6:57. My pen is in my hand. Max crawls up to my knees. Dear, je suis trop gypsy. I still remember you after all these years there in Paris. I miss you. I hope you are well and happy. Love, Dawn. My pen is in my hand. Dear slender, eager blonde in Bordeaux, I still remember you after all these years. We had to wait for change. Remember? I miss you. I hope you are well and happy. Love, Dawn. Max crawls up to my chin. He won't take no for an answer. It is 7:24 and time to get up and walk the dog, whether my pen is in my hand or not. I had wanted to write to Rose in Saigon and Annie Lim in Manila, too. Now the front end loader starts up across the street. It is too noisy to sleep anyway.
One in every port, huh? And they all just got together in a pub reading these letters.
Right.
When I was a young and handsome man, I was really painfully shy. You're talking about a lot of...
That's why the sea dog stayed at sea, you know?
But I became less reticent as the years flew swiftly by. And the names of all the girls I knew who once were kind to me become in my mind a pleasant song, a lover's symphony. I sing a song of Susan and of Esther and Estelle, of Suni and of Sally and of Beverly as well. I won't forget Suzuko or Mariko, truth to tell, and a Chinese girl named Connie held me deeply in her spell. Now there was Rose in Saigon and Susie in Taipei. Manila gave me Annie Lim and Bangkok gave me May. Yes, there were girls in Paris and also in Bordeaux and girls in Rome and Genoa, wherever I did go. I can't remember all of them, nor they remember me, but some were unforgettable and as sweet as they could be. Yes, memories can be wonderful when looking back at life, for one recalls the happy times, forgetting all the strife. For oft when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude, and then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. Now, Wordsworth, when he wrote those Wirtz was talking about flowers. I'm talking about darling girls.
Oh, yes, we know what you're talking about.
And each girl whom I recall is a precious, lovely flower, and these precious flowers all make up a sweet bouquet in my remembrance. Perhaps I'll meet them all again in a far-off, distant sky. Till then, I'll think of all of them with a happy, grateful sigh.
Very nice.
To all the girls I've loved before.
Exactly.
Comes to mind.
There it is. Thank you.
And I don't feel so bad anymore. It's wonderful.
Hey, it fits in with seafarers, right? One in every port, like you said before.
Beautiful.
Oh,
now keep going. Let's pick out another one there, bud. This is your moment for some poetry.
Did I do flat tires yet?
Yes, you did.
Okay, how about...
And we're not having another flat. Thank you very much.
Okay, here's one. Do you remember 1940s music?
Actually, I don't, but go ahead.
I'll bet you will remember some of this. Do you remember the music of the great dance bands? Russ Morgan and Music in the Morgan Manor, Swing and Sway with Sammy Kaye, Wayne King, the Waltz King, and his theme song, The Waltz You Saved for Me, Jimmy Dorsey, the Sentimental Gentleman of Swing, Kay Kaiser's College of Musical Knowledge, and Ish Kabibble, the shuffle music of Henry Bussey, Glenn Miller and his orchestra, Horace Hite and his musical nights, the big band sounds of so many. Do you remember Gene Krupa, Harry James, Lionel Hampton, Louis Prima, Tommy Dorsey, Benny Goodman, the King of Swing with his theme song Let's Dance and his jazz quartet? Do you remember those smooth, fast-talking announcers? And this music is coming to you from Frank Daly's Meadowbrook on the Newark-Pompton Turnpike in Cedar Grove, New Jersey. Or from the beautiful Rainbow Room high up in the Empire State Building overlooking the heart of New York City. Or from the Avalon Ballroom overlooking the beautiful harbor on Santa Catalina Island. Do you remember Hawaii Calls and the music from under the giant banyan tree at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel fading in and out because it came from so far across the sea? The sound of the waves breaking on the beach of Waikiki in the background. Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians bringing in every new year with Auld Lang Syne. Do you remember the sophisticated sounds of Paul Whiteman and his orchestra? Les Paul and Mary Ford and How High the Moon. Do you remember Stomping at the Savoy Ballroom in New York City? Artie Shaw, Bing Crosby, the Andrews Sisters, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, Peggy Lee, the Ink Spots, the Mills Brothers, and Dinah Shore. Do you remember Kate Smith standing sideways and singing God Bless America to all the movie audiences during World War II? And that beautiful voice of hers, then you remember the music of the 1940s.
Thank All right.
You. What a wonderful reflection.
Yes.
Thank you.
It made me think of Rocco.
Yes, it did. As a matter of fact, Rocco
should
tune into this.
We should have a copy of that for him because he remembers. We have a show on Saturdays. Rocco's does Saturday Morning Music Hall, and he plays all the hits of the last 60 or 70 years.
Oh, marvelous.
He knows them all.
Marvelous.
Yeah, he's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He would love that poem.
And then you got Kay Kaiser. I mean, Kay Kaiser was from Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Aha, right.
Just up the street.
It's Absolutely. Amazing what talents have merged from this area.
Yep. So it's...
give us another. What do we have? The Swan Song. That sounds...
Okay.
This is not the finale, folks. It's just called the Swan
Song.
On
completion of my 37th consecutive four-month contract this Thursday, is that a record? Herewith is Senior Teaching Fellow Professor Don Tuthill's Swan Song. It may be doggerel, but it's from the heart. There once was a time when this community college hired an old Navy commander who had developed some knowledge of poetry, grammar, and English composition. It was the first time he'd taught, so he spent time in thought and worked extra hard to warrant his position. Since in English he was doing his very best, they let him go on to teach Student Success and Vanity of Vanities, Intro to Humanities. He led weekend trips to study Hemingway in Key West, and the students all thought those trips were the best. He taught Honors Comp 1 and Honors Comp 2. It seemed there was nothing they wouldn't ask him to do. He sat on the college-wide curriculum committee, judged essays and poems without any pity, chose from teachers those to be tenurable professors, and for students became one of their trusted confessors. He continued to teach as the years went by. He enjoyed it so much that the time seemed to fly. And then came the time to give it all up. After 12 years of teaching, it still seemed abrupt. A few of his students were now here as teachers, while some gave it up and just sat in the bleachers. It took several boxes to carry off all his stuff, and he thought his things were barely enough. Looking back at it all, it was very worthwhile, so now I can leave with a satisfied smile, and yet it's a satisfied smile with a sigh of regret. The wheel of life rolls on in the warm spring sun or the cold winter snow. Some people come and some people go.
Beautifully done.
I've loved it.
Sounds like a very personal recollection there.
Goodbye, old friend. Goodbye.
Fantastic. Indeed. So you were teaching in the community colleges, something you had a career after.
I loved it.
After the military, you went to teaching.
13 years.
There's not much he didn't try. That makes me think of toasting old friends.
Yes. Was that in North Carolina here?
No, that was Florida, Valencia Community College.
Valencia? Yes. Right down from Orlando.
Yes.
I lived in Winter Park for about eight years.
Beautiful place. I like Winter Park.
I'm delighted to hear you say that.
Yes, and I believe my daughter took some classes at Valencia many years ago.
Maybe it was the same time frame. Maybe I taught her.
Maybe you taught her. I'll have to ask her. Fantastic.
See, she's written a poem called To Sir With Love.
But I loved it. I just loved the kids. Good, bad, ugly, whatever. Right. I just loved them, every one of them.
So what brought you to North Carolina?
My wife's daughter.
Okay.
My wife's daughter lives here. Uh-huh. And so, okay.
Right.
One of those magnetic pulls of family, huh?
There it is.
Yeah, it tends to do that to you. But is it any wonder that I always introduce Don as the poet laureate of Apex? I mean, this man has got it.
Yeah. You've got a beautiful rhythm and feeling.
It's funny how it'll start. For example, there was once a time when this community college hired an old Navy commander who had developed some knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's where it'll start, and then it will just flow from that. And same with all of them. They just start with a couple of lines, and then they just kind of flow from there.
And you tend to circumnavigate your subject and your theme, which is beautiful there. Mm-hmm. And also one of the things I appreciate about him, you know that I use a lot of rhyme in my work because I'm particularly fond of it, and I try to make it not predictable rhyme, but just I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to say something with that kind of rhythm.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to meet somebody else that actually leans on rhyme a bit because so many people steer from it.
It's the same thing with me. The little bit of poetry I've ever written, it's always been along that line and so on. And I have about 24 that I've written over the years.
Well, at some point we'll have to do a Bob Crowley, Bob Marley version of a show.
Oh, my God.
Do you work on your poems, or do they just come? Do you get a lot of rewrite?
They just come. Fantastic. I know there are people who sit down with a blank piece of paper and a pencil and say, okay, now I'm going to write a poem.
Doesn't always work that way. Doesn't work for me, anyway.
No.
I think I like the statement that Ray Bradbury made. When I consider Ray Bradbury a poet more than a story writer because everything he writes has a poetic rhythm. And he once said, to force a thought is to murder it. And that's where I stand.
Oh, I agree with that completely. You can't force it. It just is going to happen. When you feel it inside. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like writing a novel or writing anything. A lot of writers will tell you that once you get a character, the character will tell you what's going on. Mm-hmm. All you're doing is not necessarily creating it from within yourself. Well, you are, but it's the character is talking to you and telling
you what to write.
It evolves
in you, yeah.
And that's very true. I mean, I've done things where, okay, I'm going to take this character in this direction, and the character won't let me.
Character takes you in the direction.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'll start to write, and I'll say, that doesn't work. And the character is fighting back. It just will not let you go
very
there.
True.
And that's
and later
as
on,
it
when you
be.
When you read your own work, you see why it didn't let you
Absolutely.
Go there. Because it knows where it's going better than we do.
It's interesting that the different motivations whatever it is that lifts us up into doing this writing, it's interesting. Yours is a novel. Mm-hmm. I couldn't write that long over anything over a page. What? No. And it just comes. Yep. Like I said.
Well, that's probably because you started in poetry, whereas Bob probably, like myself, started with a narrative.
Well, I have written some narrative stuff. I think Bob mentioned Carrier Landing, describing the whole thing of landing on a carrier with a in a jet. It's a wild experience.
It's got to be.
It really isn't.
Well, give us a summation of some of your favorite times at sea, since we're narrowing. Well, we're not quite there yet, but we've got a little bit of time left. Give us any fond experiences you want to remember?
Well, besides all the girls you've loved before.
Yes, exactly.
Like what?
Besides all the girls you've loved before.
Well, I didn't meet any at sea.
No, not at sea. Okay.
Back in those days, girls weren't allowed in the Navy.
Right.
Now things are changing. And now, in fact, I understand they're letting them on submarines.
Yes, that just came about.
That's like, this is the girl you're going to spend the next 2 weeks with in this telephone booth.
It's no longer just a male phallic symbol, huh?
No.
Interesting. I just heard that. That was only recently revealed.
Oh, God's sakes.
I don't know that I'd want to be in one. I mean, God, you face every disadvantage in the world down there.
I wouldn't want to be in a submarine. I don't like.
Keep
the
me
idea
above the water,
of being
please.
Under all that water. I never even liked driving through the Holland Tunnel.
I've got one here to the younger generation. If I've got time to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Okay. To the younger generation. Honor the names of those who died that you might be born free. Honor the men whose valor gave this world to you and me. You can't recall if you ever knew when World War II began. You're barely aware that once we warred against Germany and Japan. Nothing you know of the Bulge, the Blitz, Corregidor, and Bataan. But once these words were on the lips of every child and woman and man, you wouldn't have heard a single word in praise of the heroes we knew, the men who fought and died for us, and they were more than a few. There was Colin Kelly, the Sullivans, and Private Roger Young. They fought and died as the heroes of the men they lived among. These heroes' names are never taught to young folks going to school, and if they were, it would be for naught, for the kids wouldn't think it was cool. They died while fighting in World War II in the air, on land, and on sea. Their actions saved the freedom enjoyed by people like you and me. They all were great American men like the ones who lived just down the street. They were part of America's wartime best and the kind you might any day meet. Yes, they were ordinary men, the heroes of our day. The Bataan Death March was only one of the stops along the way. Our friends, the Brits survived the Blitz and we won the war at sea. We won at the Bulge and our troops went on to win ultimate victory. So please do not forget them, for they gave this world to you. They suffered and died, not just for pride, but to keep this country free. Honor the names of the flag they served, the red, the white, and the blue. Lift up this country's name in prayer, and you'll be serving it too.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Bravo. Yes.
Very nice. Yes. Thank you.
Feel free to treat us with another one if you'd like.
Yeah, okay.
We might as well just continue rolling on with that. I'm sort of enjoying this.
Dog. The pee on the dogs. Okay, here's one. I don't know whether this will fit your situation or not, but it will fit some people's as it did mine when I wrote it. No card, no call. An older person's expectations of remembrance by some near relations often meet with no response at all. A birthday card's not much to ask. A phone call's not an onerous task, but the older person's hopes are doomed to fall. The kids have lives of their own to live. Their time is not their own to give. They're busy doing the things they have to do. With such demands upon their time to look through cards with words that rhyme and send one off to someone such as you is asking just too much, you see. It impinges on their liberty to take their own kids off to see the zoo. Yes, you sent them off to college, filled their heads with vital knowledge, but that's the sort of thing you're supposed to do. It seems that you forgot to say there'll come a time there to repay by sending a card or simply calling you. But let it go. Their time will come. Their own kids they will not hear from, and then perhaps at last they'll think of you.
Yeah.
That sort of reminds me of the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right. Never seem to have that time.
Time wounds all heals.
Right, exactly. The first time I heard that line was on MASH. Hawkeye said it, I think.
Time wounds all heals?
Yeah, that.
All right.
Always like that. Well, let's have one more from you, Don, then we'll sort of start closing the show.
This is kind of a tearjerker, but it's, I think, well done.
Get out your handkerchiefs.
A part of my heart is always crying for that which was but is no more, for that which should have been but never was, for the many who were called but who never were chosen, for the needs never met, the hungry, the homeless, the friendless, the lonely, for those who were rejected or never were selected. A part of my heart is always crying. For those who were fired and those never hired, for the plain, the unlucky, the ones not bright, for those who got C's but should have had B's, for that which is and never should have been, for those who never mattered, whose dreams have been shattered, for the unskilled, untalented, unlovely, a part of my heart is always crying. For those whose jokes weren't funny and whose stories were boring, for those made ashamed for having tried, for those whose dog ran away or died or had to be put to sleep, for those who have lost someone they loved, for those whose lives are empty, who didn't achieve and couldn't believe, a part of my heart is always crying.
Whoa. That's powerful.
We actually have time for one more, so go ahead and pick up another one.
Okay.
You have a chapbook, or we might want to tell people how they can find your poems.
Oh,
if they want to read some more.
Well, I've got a book called Let Happiness Come to Your Door.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be found through Ex Libris.
Uh-huh.
Ex Libris.
Or is that good? Why don't you give them your personal email?
Oh, my personal email, yes, indeed. Calbo Don, and you have to understand what Calbo means. My wife named me that. She's from the Philippines, and in Tagalog, Calbo means bald, and it's a very apt.
Well, you better spell that and so give the whole address.
K A L D O N. Don is in Donald. K A L B O D O N. Calbo Don at AOL.com.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to hear it from anybody. And
if anybody doesn't remember that, you can always go to claudioarts.com and just sort of nudge me, and I'll get back to you about it as well.
And we're also talking to some of the local bookstores about picking up and starting to carry this book. So
good.
Look around. You may find it.
Okay. Go ahead. You've got another one for us.
Give us one more there, Don.
Okay. The Professor.
This is Don Tutio, the Apex Poet Laureate. Also in the studio, we have Bob Crowley, the president of the Apex Arts Council, my co-host, Audrey Layden, who also has her own show.
Carborough Bookbeat.
There we go.
Mondays
and this is
10.
Yours truly, Claudio, on Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Back to you, Don.
Okay, the professor. This is me.
How dare you?
I thought I better start leading off with that. Once there was a man who taught English composition till a pretty old girl compromised his position. She turned in a paper that he gave her an A on, although it was written entirely in crayon. The rest of her class had all used computers, but she had a pair of magnificent Hooters.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
When he looked at the class, she often surprised him. She let him see things that hypnotized him. She let him have glimpses of her pink little panties. They weren't the kind worn by your old maiden aunties. But their little affair never came to fruition. It all fell apart when she paid her tuition. They made her take a test, and she totally flunked it. And as for her grade, she completely debunked it. The teacher lost his teaching job and never got another. He had to go and live with his old widowed mother. She got a job dancing at a place called Ruby's, where she shows a lot more than a fine set of boobies. He got a job cleaning up at the Magic Kingdom. She didn't just nick him, she really winged him. It's all kind of funny, she says with a giggle and throws in a little extra bit of a wiggle. If he'd have just asked, he could have had what he wanted. He didn't need to think he was just being taunted. I wanted it too, but that's the way it goes. How it might have ended up, well, nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. How fitting.
Professor.
How fitting you want to
professor.
To exit on.
That's not autobiographical now, is it?
I think he revealed that to begin with. Yes, it was a
yes, it is.
It was a confession.
Yes, it is.
Oh, man.
Bless her heart.
Well, listen, I want to thank you folks for being on. That was Don Tutio, the Apex Poet Laureate. We also had Bob Crowley.
Always
the
a pleasure.
President of the Apex Arts Council, and God knows then some. And, of course, Audrey, my co-host here in the studio. And this is yours truly, Claudio. John Paul is coming in for his show right after ours, so we're going to give him a little extra time. Mm-hmm. And I always extend this to everyone that comes on Claudio Speakeasy for the first time. You're part of the family now, so this won't be the first or the last. Thanks for being on, Don.
Thank you, sir. I've enjoyed it, and it was an honor.
It's been a real pleasure.
Here we go.
Cheers.